Professor, first of all, let me say I fully agree on the virtue of self-criticism. If I may sum up your words, with your permission, I think there are three broad points. In the first place, I understand that you agree that the Arab armies assaulted Israel when it came to life. In other words, what Israel was doing, she was doing is self-defense.
Well, there's more to be said to it than that, because, of course, the United Declaration Nations of Independence and so on was, I suppose, from the Arab point of view, a provocation.
Provocations was on the basis of the United Nations decision, and every United Nations record attests to that, including those I've quoted. And on July the 15th, 48, Arab position having reached what it had in terms of threat to peace, the United Nations Security Council considered the situation in the category of threat to peace and said they might have to apply Article 39 in terms of what's to be done in the situation. But you would admit, Professor, I mean, that is a fact, that they did attack us. I mean, you've got to see it in that context. Now, you argue that facing up to this attack, our people committed two grave atrocities. Number one, the Deir Yassin incident.
Yeah.
Number two, driving out Arabs and turning them into refugees.
Yeah.
And now, before I deal with these two points, and I will in a moment, very central to your thesis is that the Nazi impact of persecution on the Jewish people brought them to do such atrocities. And you've mentioned the British action bombing civilians in Port Said in 1956. Now, Professor, in Volume 4, page 128F of your study of history, you say that in the history of man's attempt at civilization hitherto, there has never been any society whose progress in civilization has gone so far that in times of revolution or war, its members could be relied upon not to commit atrocities. And you quote here, this was written before World War II, behavior of the German army in Belgium in 1914, the British black and tans in Ireland in 1920, the French army in Syria, German National Socialist stormtroops at home in 1933 before World War II, and the Italian black shirts. Am I correct, sir, in assuming that you feel that this is in a record down history? Now, you said that because of the bombing of Britain by the Germans, a certain state of mind, some impact, some scar developed in the British consciousness, and that reflected itself in the bombing of Port Said. Now, the black and tans in Ireland was 1920, well over 13 years before Hitler came to power. And there are many such incidents I could recall. You could even take during World War II, British bombing of Berlin.
Yes, certainly.
Now, would you agree with me that all these instances have an element of cruelty, which is quite comprehensive in your term? Berlin in World War II, whether it be earlier the Black and Tans, whether it be Hiroshima, whether it be even the treatment of the early American Indians. Right through this, you feel that there is a sense of atrocity. Now, how do you relate all this to Nazism? Secondly, you agree that there were also Arab massacres of Jewish civilians. I can give you details. If you will come to Israel, I will show you their graves in frightening cruelty. And long before Deir Yassin, to which I'll refer in a minute, were these also in the category of Nazi atrocities? And if so, why don't you say that both sides did things in such a category? Why do you choose us? Why do you single us out? Why don't you write of Britain and of almost every country in the world according to your own definition? And finally, a word on Deir Yassin. I suggest some refugees. We'll talk it later as a separate part. But on Deir Yassin, I would say this. Deir Yassin took place after a series of massacres, such as the destruction of 50 Jewish laborers in Haifa in December 1947, convoy after convoy, the well-known convoy to Yechiyam, in which we lost 40 people, the blowing up of Ben Yehuda, 50 people killed in Jerusalem, 70 wounded, under enormous provocation. It was a city under siege. In your own survey of international studies, written by Dr. Kirk under your editorship, he quotes the commander of the Irgun at the time as having said that his men suffered heavy casualties, appreciable casualties, and those responsible for that action have claimed that the Arab residents of the village were warned to leave the houses and that this tragedy developed through hand-to-hand fighting, and indeed the commander of the operation was killed. But I would add, be that as it may, this action was condemned in most vigorous terms by the Jewish agency of the time, and a message of regret was sent to King Abdullah of Jordan. So you've got to look at in this category. Yes. We heard no such expressions of regret for Arab massacres, although they were undertaken within the category of armed offensive against us. So to sum up, sir, what I would ask you, do you agree that there is a line linking every act of atrocity committed by soldiers various countries and down the ages. If so, would you agree that this odium of a Nazi impact would be attached to all such nations, not only to Israel, including to the Arabs, for what they did to us, particularly since they attacked us and we were operating on self-defense? And on Deir Yassin and the refugee matter, we'll talk to it later.
Yes. Well, I suppose the Arabs could match atrocity. You, Mr. Ambassador, gave shortly, so very, you could give many more instances of Arab massacres of Jews, and they could give many, many, I suppose, of...
By the way, sir, if I may just interrupt you. At the end of the first week after the November 29th resolution, 105 Jews were killed and many more injured. In 1 week, right after resolution in December 1947.
Yes.
This is on record.
But there were things on both sides. Now, about my own country, as you say, in a volume published between the wars, I did mention things my own country had done of this kind. And if I'd not published this volume 2 years before the aggression against Egypt, I would certainly have mentioned my country's aggression in this context. I couldn't, because I wrote, published in 54, and the thing happened in 56. There's a thing which the Indians call karma, which is the chain of moral evil. It's a generalization of what I tried to suggest before, that it's something in human nature which makes us pass on to against other people the evil that has been done to us. And I agree with the ambassador that this is a very general and a very horrible thing in human life. But I also feel very strongly that, as the Buddha felt when he emphasized this chain of karma, that that is not an excuse. We can't just say, well, this is part of human nature, everybody does it or has done it at some time, therefore we can all get away with it and mutually, so to speak, condone what each of us does. We have to break this chain. Now, coming back to the Israel case, I know very well that there are many people, no doubt a majority in Israel, who were horrified at those massacres done by some Israeli armed forces. And the Israelis are a rather small minority of the people of Jewish religion in the world. And I'm sure that the majority of Jews in the world, as far as they knew about this, were also horrified. And their responsibility, one has a slight responsibility for anyone's co-religionists do. I feel a slight responsibility for what my Protestant Christian co-religions of European race are doing at this moment in South Africa, and a much greater one for what my English Protestant co-religionists are doing in Rhodesia and, say, Kenya. But these degrees of responsibility are limited. But I would make the point that all Israel has implicated itself, so to speak, in the results of that flight, partly expulsion, to a smaller extent, massacre of the Palestinian Arabs, because they have taken and held the land and the property, which is legally and rightfully still that of the Arabs. Now, putting it bluntly, this is robbery, and I'm sure it is on the Jewish conscience. And this is a continuing thing which has to be cleared up, first of all, by the Jews themselves, but it also does concern all Jewish communities all over the world who make Israel's existence possible by their financial and also by their political support, particularly the Canadians and United States citizens who are Jews by religion, who have the greatest financial power and the strongest political say in this matter. So we have this continuing question of how to break the chain of karma, how to prevent the wrong that has been done, which was bred, I agree, by previous wrongs, from breeding further wrongs in its turn. I have been in the refugee camps in the Gaza Strip, and I have heard the songs that the children sing in their schools. If you wanted to see what it was like to be a Jew, say, 13 or 14 years after Nebuchadnezzar exiled the Jews, go to the Gaza Strip and you will and study the spirit and state of mind of the Arabs there. They're saying just the same things, feeling just the same things that the Jews felt then, have continued to feel later. This was our country, we mean to return.
Can I answer you here, Professor?
Please, yes.
You'll pardon me if I come back to the original issue. I said again, I'll deal with the refugee matter in a minute.
Yes.
But the original issue was the question of comparing what we did morally to what the Nazis did to us. Now, I think it's been established that there was a war of aggression against us. I've given some background to the Deir Yassin massacre. I will deal later with the refugee matter. But from what I understand, from the quotation I gave and from what you've now elaborated, would you agree, Professor, that this stigma of comparison, of moral comparison, applies not only to our people, but to those Arabs who were responsible for massacres, the ones I detailed, and many more, I can give you lists, to most of the nations of the world who at any time, their soldiers, in war, even in self-defense, have been guilty of atrocity?
I've distinguished sharply, though this is difficult, but this is one of the necessary and valuable conventions of human society between suffering, death, mutilation caused in fighting between organized and uniformed armed forces and massacres by people of civilians behind the front.
Accepted. I'm referring any instances in history, and when you talk here of atrocities, you do not mean between the combatants. You mean atrocities committed by military people against civilians.
Yes.
And you've quoted certain allegations against us, which I'll deal with separately. But suppose, from your standpoint, extreme standpoint, and so our propaganda claims, that we were guilty of the atrocity in that form. But do you admit, sir, that the similar guilt attaches to nearly every country in the world? For at some time or other, as you yourself have said in your quote, no society, its members can be relied on not to commit atrocities in time of war revolution. And again, I say, even if it's in self-defense.
I agree that most societies have committed atrocities, but I do not think that condones atrocities.
I didn't say so, sir.
No.
I agree with you on that. But I mean, you do agree that this same element, this comparison, can be applied on a universal level to any country which, in war, its soldiers have committed atrocities against civilians.
Yes, atrocities are atrocities, and murder is murder, whoever commits it.
And that would apply also, sir, in case of Arab atrocities against Jewish civilian population?
Why, of course.
Yes. And black and tans?
Of course.
For United States?
Yes.
Early Indians?
Yes.
A whole ream is limitless. In other words, that what you were saying, if I now understand it, was that within a general category of denouncing violence or atrocities by military people against civilians, that Israel, in your opinion, was not separate from the rest of mankind, but was guilty of the same thing as others.
Of course I don't think that Israelis are different from mankind. I'm not an anti-Semite to think they're not human.
I meant the contrary. Professor, what I meant was this, that you do not... What you're saying is that you Israelis cannot claim to be stand above the rest of mankind because what they've all done in time of war, even as self-defense, you've also done. Would that be correct, sir?
I also, it's curious to me to defend the Germans and the Nazis of all people, because I've my country suffered in two wars of aggression by the Germans. But they too are human, and what the Nazis did is not peculiar. And I mean, not peculiar in the sense that the ambassador has explained that this unhappily is something that is in all human nature and we have to break. Now, why I brought up the case of the Israelis in this connection was simply the practical fact that I was writing about the Palestine question and about the question between Jews and Gentiles in the world.
But it would apply to any other nation too.
And in, as the ambassador has quoted in other places in my book, I brought up cases in which I took my examples from the British and the French. And
I think from that point I could just say, if I may now, in a more academic sense, I feel that in analysing atrocities in history, there are gradations. I feel the Nazi onslaught, what they did, is something quite specific. Can it be compared to any other atrocity in human history? But you, sir, disagree. In terms of, let's say, the gradations of morality, how can I explain to you?
Yes.
Take the people in Israel who went through the hell, which were the Nazi death camps in Europe, the remnants.
Yes.
On coming out of those death camps,
yes.
They tried to get to Israel, Palestine at the time, and many of them on ships were held up by the British Navy and arrested or sent over to Cyprus, put into camps. Yes. Now, let's take a man on a ship like that. He had gone through the hell. He saw what the Nazis did to him. Now, you'll be surprised, Professor, if you speak to these remnants today, although they felt at the time that the British attitude was one of cruelty and certainly political blindness, but they did not equate it with the Nazis.
Yes.
These same people who went through the Nazi experience, Holocaust, who escaped from it, their soul was not so shattered as to equate further evil as being a Nazi level.
Yes.
And it is these same people, you say, who were so influenced by the Nazis that they did similar things to the Arabs. But I think that we can leave this point now with your permission. I think that the fact that you've set in the universal context shows it is a distinctive view of yours, that Israel is at one, or rather, if I may quote the point, that Israel is not separate from the rest of nations of the world.
I think Israel is a difference from other human beings,
In other words, in the Nazi pal lies across the world. Before the Nazis came, this business of atrocity and cruelty, and after they've gone. With your permission, Professor, I would suggest we go to the second point.
Yes.
And actually, as I open, you referred to, I must add, one side of observation, the question of land holdings. I would say that any study of the British mandatory land registers will show that 70% of the land, which is now Israel, was government-owned. Belonged to the government, to the mandate, formerly to the Ottomans.
Yeah.
It never belonged to any separate Arab political entity in Palestine down the ages. The only times this Palestine was a separate political entity was twice under Jewish rule, once under the Crusaders. But that's for a later study.
I'm talking about a private property.
A private property, and on the private property, which was taken through the war, we have promised and are ready to give full compensation.
Yes.
This has been promised time and again to the United Nations, and in this respect I can speak officially, although here I'm in a personal capacity. But, Professor, let's come back to this question of the historical connection to which you referred. You're quoted having said Israel has no historical right, Jewish people, to Israel. May I say some fact in this respect?
Yes.
Number one, the continuity of Jewish residence in the land of Israel never ceased at any time in history. And I can quote you records on that, century after century. Secondly, the return to Israel has been central in our religious faith, in our prayers, in our festivals, in every aspect of our national aspiration. Thirdly, the international community has recognized the validity of that right. Balfour Declaration, League of Nations, United Nations. Fourthly, even the Arabs at the beginning did. There was a message from Emir Faisal to Dr. Weizmann. He headed the Arab delegation to the peace conference in Versailles, and there's an agreement between them. And another letter on that agreement, Emir Faisal writes that he welcomes the Jews home.
Yes, I was there. I was, you know, that,
Well, I hope that I haven't misquoted the
Emir. No, that's right.
At least I have very clear testimony on that.
Yeah.
So you cannot put it in the category of saying that a title which went obsolescent in 132, it is not that. It has been a continuous link and aspiration century after century. Some of our greatest religious thought and work has been produced there. The Mishnah, the Jerusalem Talmud, Medrash, the Targum, Masorah, and down, right down to Shulchan Aruch, which is the basic code of Jewish law, all produced century after century in continuous residence there. And time and again, our people hoped to achieve independence, but that didn't work out. In 1917, a new motive began, a new momentum, but it was there all the time. You speak of the first settlement being in 1881. I can show you documents of Jewish settlements and towns in Palestine of those days from the 10th century.
Safed in the 16th century is the case.
Even earlier, Sadia Gaon, Benjamin Metudela of the 12th century.
Yes.
Maimonides, Yehuda Halevi, 12th century.
Yes.
Nachmanides, early 13th century. Continuous residence.
Yes.
Rabbi Estori Farchi, author of Kaftor Vofera, continuous residence all the time. And the whole motive of our life was linked up with that. We feel that the present revival of the Third Commonwealth of Israel is a vindication of immortal prophecy that has been our course down the ages. We've traversed the valley of death, and now under graceful providence, we've come to the uplands of fulfillment. That's how we see our history. It was not snapped. You feel that we were a fossil and went off somewhere and sort of fell on the skating ring and used Montreal terms. We didn't. We didn't. We remained vital and alive and creative. And may I, sir, at this stage express some surprise that in your book you don't refer at all to that line of Jewish creativity. And by the way, Einstein also belongs to that collective fossil category.
The ambassador raised two questions just now. One was the question about the Jewish claim or title to Palestine, and the other was about the word fossil that I've used, not only about the Jews, but quite a number of different people, for instance, the Parsis and various Christian sects, and to some extent the Greeks.
Excuse me, so you do differentiate between fossilism, I've been reading your books, and archaism. Parsis and we are in the fossil category. Archaic, you've got there the Greeks, I think the Turks, in terms of the Turks, and the Norwegians, and the Irish. Now, I'm not going to deal with the Irish problem, I've been thrown there.
Don't just bring that into it.
No. I have a feeling that they've all been well able to look after themselves, so I leave that to the Irish ambassador.
I think the Israelis look after themselves too pretty well, but... let me come seriously now back to this question of the Jewish title. What is remarkable about the Jews, what has, I suppose, made the Jewish communities exist today is, as the ambassador truly says, the fact that they didn't lose their memory of their homeland. In this they were exceptional among the people who were uprooted and deported by the Assyrians and Babylonians all that time ago in the 8th and 7th and 6th centuries BC. The next kingdom had the same religion, the kingdom of Israel, didn't, like the people of the Kingdom of Judah, manage to maintain its corporate identity in exile. As we know, the 10 tribes disappeared, unless the British Israelites are right in saying the British are the last 10 tribes, and I don't think they are right about that. Today, the Kingdom of Israel is represented only by a few hundred Samaritans, some in Jordan, some in the present state of Israel, and all the other peoples of Syria, temporaries of Judah and Israel, have completely disappeared, whereas the Jews have kept their identity. And they've kept it by the memory of Palestine. I mentioned just now that I think the Jews of today and tomorrow are going to be the Palestinian Arab refugees, because they are in just the state of mind in which the Jews were immediately after the exile by Nebuchadnezzar. And Palestine seems to have some magic over people's minds that once they have lived in it, as the Arabs have more recently than the majority of the Jews, your emotions never can let hold of that land. But anyway, now, what about this claim? I would say that if one has that historical and emotional relation to a country, one has a certain claim to have the freedom of that country, but under one condition, that one doesn't carry one's claim to a point where it is going to cause hardship, wrong, and injustice to the existing inhabitants of the country. There is a thing in law, and I think in all forms of law, called the statute of limitations, which for the sake of producing the minimum amount of hardship and suffering, says that a legal claim does expire after such and such time. Now, if we take AD 135 was a time when, except in parts of Galilee, the solid Jewish population in Palestine was uprooted by action of the Romans, which I don't have to defend the Emperor Hadrian, fortunately. If we take that date and say the statute of limitations doesn't apply even to people who lost their hold in AD 135, what happens to Montreal? Well, the Algonquins had it only 400 years ago. Is that to go back to them? It's much less than AD 135. Is England to go back to the Welsh? Yes. It caused a good deal of hardship, that's all I can say. You have to deport about 50 million English and turn them into refugees.